You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 020, yes, the 20th podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show. My name is Daniel Pinto Gunderson. You can find me on Twitter at PintoKFGO. My co-host, Brad the White Shadow Jones, you can find him on Twitter.
I'm at the Bison Guy.
Make sure and hit us up on the Facebook. Message us so you can leave some comments on our KFGO.com podcast page. Just go to KFGO.com, click on the podcast link, scroll down, find the Pinto and White Shadow Show right there. We'll gladly accept your comments. I know Marcus from Mayville added another comment in our last podcast. We'll get to that in just a moment. A lot of things to get to today. Football, FCS playoffs, NDSU, what the heck is going on with that basketball team?
Yeah, whatever. We need to talk about shopping.
What?
I think, isn't that what people want to know about on the podcast, is shopping?
I don't know if that...
am I playing to our audience? Black Friday, are you going to run over any old ladies to go get a spatula? That's what I want to know.
A spatula?
Sure.
I'm not that... I haven't seen anything on there that I've liked where I've gone, I must have. I've seen a lot of things for... This, to me, is kind of weird advertising. It goes, Black Friday sales, Thursday, open at 6.
Yeah.
So why are
we
still...
opening earlier and earlier and earlier, and now it's not even Friday anymore.
Yeah, so why call it Black Friday? Just call it Thursday. Thanksgiving. We're open up on Thanksgiving. And don't call it Black Thanksgiving, because that just puts a negative connotation with it. Just say, hey, we want your money, and we know you're pitiful enough to come to us early. So
I did that last year. My mom and I showed up at Walmart in Jamestown, North Dakota, at about 8 or 9 o'clock. I ended up getting a second TV for my man cave. It's where I picked up my 40-inch TV to go along with my 50-inch TV.
You're such a bachelor.
I really am. It's, why do I not have a girlfriend? I don't understand.
Yeah, no kidding.
It really is a mystery.
You know the exact sizes of TVs, and you have two of them.
I do.
And
yes.
Neither of them are in your room at all.
No, they're both in my living room.
Yeah, you're definitely.
They really are.
How do you not have a girlfriend? That's a great question. Black Friday has never appealed to me because I hate getting up early. Hate it.
Oh, well, that's fine, because
last two years,
I haven't gone to bed. We stayed up all night and went shopping.
Now it's not even I have to go to bed. I just finish the turkey, put down the fork, get on the coat, walk out the door.
You could just go between football games.
I could, exactly, but I will not.
You will not.
I did it once. I went shopping, got some clothes that I needed for work. I just started working here. And then after that, I'm going, I don't know why I do it.
That's a complete waste of Black Friday. The goal is not to buy gifts for other people or something useful. It's to buy something that you have absolutely no need for, like a second TV.
But they're on sale, so it makes sense.
Yeah, $150 or $180 for a 50 or a 40-inch TV.
It's not a bad deal at
all.
All
day.
Yeah.
All day.
I don't have that kind of cash to just drop.
Mm, neither did I, which was part of the problem.
Yeah. I don't know why I would do that. There's other things I need to do, like fill up my gas tank and buy food. So I'm going to completely bypass Black Friday this year. So, and I hope the rest of you enjoy your Black Friday and Thanksgiving. This will be the last podcast we get to before Thanksgiving. So we'll say it right now. Happy Thanksgiving to all those out there. I know Brad will be sending me pictures of peach cobbler and
grandma's Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah, absolutely. That's where we're going back to South Dakota, where I called in from a few weeks ago.
That's gonna be fun.
But just the main reminder for everybody out there is, make sure if you're gonna run over a grandma, make sure you do it to one that doesn't have a cane, because she'll start swinging if she does.
Okay.
Just saying. These are the strategies I've learned over the last few years.
This is like a PSA for those out
there.
That's
right. It's a public service announcement.
Oh my goodness.
Don't run over a grandma with the cane, because then she's got a weapon and could take you down.
Oh, boy. Somebody's about to run over this podcast. We got to get back onto the track. Let's open things up with
local.
And we start here. NDSU football team, a 42-0 victory over the University of South Dakota. Frankly, I was a little surprised at the beatdown. I honestly was. I thought South Dakota was going to come in and compete, and they didn't. I look at the stats. They did not compete.
No. It didn't help that they were missing their top running back, that Bama was out for the game and missed most of last week's game as well. So that didn't help. They had the same running back in for literally every snap until he got hurt. It was late third, early fourth quarter when Roberts went down.
Yep.
And then they had to put in their quarterback, this person who started the season as the starting quarterback, then moved to wide receiver, and then Vandermotten took over as running back. So it was thin times for USD.
NDSU completely dominates USD. USD has given up 96 points to NDSU in the last 2 years and have scored exactly zero in the last 2 years. And USD had a good year for that team. The kind of
they
going,
had a good start.
They had a good start, and they competed well. You could see that there's the right people are in place for this team to be much more competitive, and that's what you want, because the first year USD was in the Missouri Valley, they got throttled by everybody. I think they won like a game, and that might have been it. And then this year they come in, and they do pretty well. Like the four games, they go 4-8 on the year, which isn't terrible. It's not good, but they competed. And the last few losses that they had, the last four losses, all against ranked teams. A couple of them came at home. They should have beat Youngstown State, and they should have beat Montana. But that's what happens when you're a young team and you don't know how to win yet. You're going to lose close games to better teams, which Youngstown State and Montana were. So NDSU, some notables here. Sam Ojuri, 118 yards and a couple scores. John Crockett, 116 yards and two scores. Here's the bigger number. They averaged Crockett 10.5 yards per carry, and Ojuri was at 8-4.
Yeah.
So they were getting yards
Ojuri,
pretty easily.
Ojuri, I believe, moved into number 4 all-time?
So, I think so. I believe you're right.
Number 4 all-time rushing?
Yes. And then Brock Jensen became the all-time winningest quarterback in FCS history. His 44th victory as a starting quarterback. 230 yards, two touchdowns. He passed Armani Edwards.
That is correct.
Of Appalachian State.
Correct.
And that was the quarterback who led that team to 3 straight titles. And you look back at those records for the Mountaineers, and they didn't have as good of overall records as NDSU did.
Yeah.
You know, and Brock Jensen's been doing this since he was a freshman. Also, Craig Bohl gets his 100th victory as an NDSU head coach. He's only been a head coach in NDSU.
This is his 11th year, I believe,
yeah,
already.
Exactly.
So, I mean, he's...
Here's a question for you.
Okay.
Last 4 years, how many of the 100 wins have came in those last 4 years?
I'm trying to do math here.
It doesn't work on radio.
It really doesn't. So that would have been, what, 47, 48, 48?
48.
48. Okay.
Exactly.
Look at that math from a communication major right here. Huh?
Attaboy. Number 48 comes yesterday against the University of South Dakota. We weren't surprised. Move on. Congratulations to NDSU and all the milestones. What I want to talk about is what I have, my hot little fingers right here.
Okay.
In here. The FCS bracket came out today.
Yes.
NDSU, not surprisingly, is number one. They are in the same bracket as Southeastern Louisiana, which won the Southland and got the number 4 seed, which was kind of surprising. Maine is in their bracket, and so is Montana. They avoid Eastern Washington. They can avoid South Dakota State. They
Eastern Illinois.
Avoid Eastern Illinois, who is number 2. They could end up playing Sam Houston State. Maine is another team that kind of scares me, and so does Montana. Brad, let's kind of talk about it a little bit. I know later in the week we're going to have a kind of an email conversation. We're going to pick the brackets. That's something that you and I are going to do, but we're going to allow our time to research and kind of figure out where we want to go with this. So let's just keep it simple. Who do you think NDSU is going to face in each round? Kind of looking at how it could play out. So we'll start with the second round. South Carolina State or Furman. And South Carolina State is the home team in that game. Do you have any idea? Does it matter, in all honesty?
No, I don't think so. I don't think any Bison fan is real concerned about either of those teams. I mean, if you're going to pin me down to it, I'm going to say South Carolina State, but that's based on nothing other than their records and the fact that they're at home.
Right.
Because we've never seen South Carolina State play.
And I won't make you stick to it. I'll let us do the research, and then we can pick later when we go on KFGO.com, the Pinto and White Shadow Show. Actually, it's Pinto's Points now is the blog post that this will be found on. I'm just going to go Furman because it sounded like from the Twitter world that South Carolina State was one of those surprising teams that got in.
Yeah, I saw that too.
So I'll go with Furman. Doesn't matter. NDSU will win by about a million. The next round, Montana, Coastal Carolina, Bethune-Cookman.
Three 10-win teams.
Yeah, who do you have NDSU taking on in that second quarterfinal round?
Definitely Montana.
Yes.
And that's going to be, you know, and part of it is a little bit of a bias is because, you know, there's the talk and everyone was complaining about the East Coast bias that the selection committee has and that they don't get any football from out here, don't understand how tough the conference is and how well the teams play and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
The whole woe is whoever my team is fan mentality that's out there. But the Montana teams are always tough. They're always good. and they're going to be familiar enough with NDSU to not be that intimidated coming in. So, yeah, that one's a little bit of a concern.
I do have Montana making it that far as well. It's a concern, yes, but in the same aspect, I think the physicality of NDSU just overmatches what Montana's going to come out with. Again, the Big Sky is known for the kind of conference that racks up a lot of points,
yep.
But they're not a physical conference. You don't see a lot of teams going, all right, let's line up six guys on the offensive line and we're going to run it right down your throat. They kind of want to finesse their way around some different things. I think NDSU, again, it's going to come down to this. Montana's going to come in. First couple quarters are going to feel each other out. And then by the time the third quarter rolls around and the fourth quarter rolls around, the physicality of NDSU is going to wear Montana out and really wear anybody
that's been
out.
The formula.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think NDSU moves past it. But I do have in my mind Montana taking on NDSU in that quarterfinal round. Which, according to Jeremy Jorgensen, it sounds like NDSU might be playing on Fridays.
I would assume so. And I talked about that with a couple people leading up to this week as well, that the Bison, I think, because there's only a couple of teams, I think only two teams that have any sort of draw, any sort of even mild national appeal in the FCS bracket.
Right.
And I think it's NDSU, and I think it's Eastern Washington because they have a red field.
Yep.
I mean, I think that's it. If you want eyeball, if you want to be changing the channel and you want somebody to stop turning for a minute, I think it's those two teams.
And Eastern Illinois has a high-powered offense, and ESPN, you had a very all-access good piece about them earlier today. But even so, you don't know much about them because it's Eastern Illinois, it's the FCS, and it's been largely ignored. I mean, there's a lot of teams out there that put up a ton of points.
Well, and that's just, and even, you know, you look at NDSU, to get any sort of national attention, NDSU had to win back-to-back national championships and beat Kansas State to be able to get any sort of recognition.
Right.
And it just, it takes you a couple years to be able to build that up. So, I mean, I think that's why you're going to see, I would say, at minimum one and very possibly two Friday night primetime games for the Bison.
And that's what the thought is, and I think that's how it's going to go. I think ESPN, the fact that they were considering Youngstown State NDSU that late in the season, kind of speaks volumes to what NDSU has done to put the FCS and themselves kind of on the national stage. So NDSU, probably a Friday game in that quarterfinal, that semifinal. Brad, looking at some teams you can probably throw at Lafayette. And I think in my mind, Southern Utah, but anything else is kind of open for discussion as far as who NDSU might face in that semifinal game. Maine sounds like a favorite. Southeastern Louisiana won a tough Southland. They put in three schools out of the Southland. Sam Houston State's one of those teams. Who do you like? I have my top three, but I know who I'm going to go with, but I'll hold judgment.
Just looking at it and not having done a lot of research yet, I would say probably Maine would be the team that I would choose, and my guess is that's probably where you're leaning as well.
No? Actually, no.
Really? Okay.
Sam Houston State in my mind.
Okay, and that was going to be my question for you, and I'm sorry I'm cutting you off here, and I'll let you finish.
No, go ahead.
What team or teams do you think that play in this first round make it to the quarterfinals?
Overall, just both sides of the bracket looking around. South Dakota State and Sam Houston State have the best chance, in my opinion, of getting to the quarterfinals.
South Dakota State?
Yeah, just eyeballing it.
Really?
Yes, right away.
Wow.
South Dakota State started playing better towards the end of the year, won four straight in games that they had to win. Their defense started to turn around a little bit. They play a ball control offense. They actually beat Southeastern Louisiana earlier this year. And they didn't just beat them. If I remember right, it was actually a pounding from what I saw. I think it was like 36-14. You know, South Dakota State, and it was 34-26. I should correct myself. It wasn't so much a pounding as it was a win over a good team, though.
Yeah.
And SDSU had to come from behind, played a good second half. However, again, this is a team that controls the ball. They have an opportunity to keep it out of the hands of a guy like Vernon Adams, who they're going to face in the next round, because I think they beat Northern Arizona.
They got to go on the road.
They have to go on the road, but when it comes to a team that doesn't turn the ball over a ton, and they like to run the ball,
okay,
South Dakota State to me, and Sam Houston State, based on the fact that they've been a little banged up this year and they've run into some teams that the target's been on their back with Southeastern Louisiana State and McNeese State, I still think because of that experience that the Bearcats have with Brian Bell and Tim Flanders, I think that their possibilities of making the quarterfinals, it's still there.
Okay.
And so right now, looking at this, and I've given the disclaimer, I have an opportunity to change this up as I look through stats, but just eyeballing it right now, I like Sam Houston State possibly getting to the semifinals to take on NDSU. And that's
all the way to the semis. Wow.
That's kind of a personal hope.
Sure.
Because I honestly was hoping it would be a Sam Houston State NDSU another national championship, which I know is kind of boring. But, I mean, I liked watching Sam Houston State as they competed their way through the playoffs the last 2 years. For the guys that I mentioned, Brian Bell and Tim Flanders, and you kind of recognize those names because of how often NDSU has played them. But to me, it's definitely Sam Houston State and South Dakota State, the two first-round teams that could get into the quarterfinals. But, again, you have Maine, and Maine actually got throttled by New Hampshire, and they could have gone 11-1, which would have put them somewhere in the other side of the bracket, in my opinion. Maybe.
No, I don't think so.
That's tough to say.
It might have gotten them a home game against Southeastern Louisiana, assuming both of those teams make it to the quarters rather than having to
go
on the road.
They would have flipped that.
I don't think they'd hopped up over either of the two Eastern teams.
Yeah, I don't think that. I got to play my new sounder because I think this might get played a lot for me.
I immediately regret this decision.
So there you go. Could have gone 11-1, and record-wise would have matched up or would have looked better than Eastern Washington. But we have to remember, Eastern Washington played in a conference that got four teams in, has four teams in, Northern Arizona, Eastern Washington, Southern Utah, and Montana. Also, Eastern Washington beat a ranked Oregon State team to open up the year, which helps why they stayed at number three. So I have NDSU in the national championship game. I don't know if that's – I mean, I think we both do. We have – I waned a little bit. Actually, you know what? I didn't wane after Ellison went down. I said they'll still make the national championship.
You did.
Yep. I can't. Yeah, don't discredit yourself right away. Who are they taking on the national championship? I know who I'd like to see him take on, but who do you think they'll take on?
I'm gonna say Eastern Washington.
Right.
I'd like to see him play Eastern Illinois, but I think it's gonna be Eastern Washington.
And that's who I'd like to see him play is Eastern Illinois, because I would love to see how Eastern Illinois does against that NDSU defense.
I want to bring the story full circle, hopefully. I want to give the Bison the chance to knock off the team that...
Knocked them off 3 years ago.
Got it.
That was a team, too. I mean, NDSU would have had a home game had they beat Eastern Washington. That's what people were saying. And who knows? I mean, that would have been the second home playoff game for NDSU, but I think it would have brought a lot more fans in than the first one did.
Yeah, over Thanksgiving weekend, that first one that year.
So that's a great point, you know? To have it come full circle, boy, how many stories could you come up with in that regard, especially for a guy like Brock Jensen, you know?
Who had just kind of, he'd been going back and forth a little bit that year with Jose Moeller as far as the starting quarterback. And
a lot due to injury, too.
Some due to injury, but really grabbed the job, at that point, so.
It would be an interesting concept. I would love to see Eastern Illinois, though, because of the fact that offensively they're such a juggernaut, and NDSU defensively. See what they could come up scheme-wise with them. I'm with you, though. I think Eastern Washington does. I think that they'll get past South Dakota State in that second round. That quarterback, Vernon Adams, is a guy that was short on a lot of short lists for some West Coast Division I teams, but they didn't give him scholarship offers because he's too short. They just didn't like his style of play, and he's a really good dual-threat quarterback, which scares me if I'm an NDSU fan, because the worst NDSU has played defensively this year was against
running quarterbacks. Yeah.
You know, and actually the worst game they had defensively was against Ferris State. When you look at the stats and how bad they were overall, stat-wise, they didn't do a good job against Ferris State, which I understand it's a Division II team. Just saying that, they should have just throttled them, but you know, they were kind of coming off a huge win against Kansas State. That's a huge letdown. You're raising the banner, so on and so forth. No excuse. You look at those stats, that was not a pretty game for them. That was a running quarterback for Ferris State. Strong guy, too. He wasn't small by any means. He's a very strong, physical kind of quarterback. Ran for over 100 yards on him. So, yeah, I think that would be why NDSU would be scared. But, yeah, again, NDSU national championship for us. We'll have our realistic bracket later in the week. Brad and I will go through these games. We'll pick who will win, starting with the first round, going all the way through. We'll do our research. want to talk a little bit, have to touch on the fact that Missouri Valley, two teams, does that shock you? Only two teams in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I lost an ongoing wager bet on that one.
Yes, I don't know if we ever made it.
Yeah, no, it was locked in.
Oh, yeah.
We did lock it in. I thought that if SDSU won, that Youngstown would still make the playoffs, and I was
That's
wrong.
That's right. I won that one.
You did win that one.
All right.
I was wrong on that. So, yeah, I mean, it did surprise me. I thought that Youngstown would still have enough of a resume going in, and didn't happen.
Also, looking around the division, Southern Illinois went 5-3 in the conference, 7-5 overall. They didn't get in. They were on the bubble. Looking at Northern Iowa, I get the 3-5 in the conference, and this is where I have my biggest issue with the committee, because to me it almost seems that they feel that the Missouri Valley is the toughest conference, or correction, the number one conference in the Gridiron Power Index, which is supposed to be used to place teams or help place teams at large teams. And it's my belief that they look at that and go, well, the only reason the Missouri Valley is number one is because NDSU is in it. And they completely discredit the fact that Northern Iowa destroyed McNeese State. Destroyed them.
Yeah.
41-9. Wasn't even close. McNeese State is a ranked or a seeded team here, a number six. Northern Iowa just dispatched them. Northern Iowa beat an FBS school. They looked, I believe, at their conference record and said, oh, they tied with South Dakota for a conference record and lost to the Coyotes. They went 7-5 overall, but who did they really beat? 7-4, and this is me as the committee, 7-4 3 years ago got NDSU into the game, into the dance, if you will, and they had just lost 3-0 to Missouri State. The committee got it right then. I think the committee screwed up here. I think the committee should have put in Youngstown State, and I think the committee should have seriously looked at Northern Iowa based on an FBS win, because as they were talking today, when they look at putting teams in the playoffs, that is one of the considerations they make, is that how do they do against the FBS school? Northern Iowa won their FBS game. To me, they should have got a harder look. Should they have gotten in? I don't know.
Yeah, it's real hard to put in a team with a losing conference record, especially if, I mean, I think Youngstown should have been in there.
Yes. Yep, I do too.
But it's hard to put a team in with a losing conference record. Now, that being said, I've got to look and see. I don't know if any of the teams that did get put in have a losing conference record. And that I don't know, in which case my opinion could be swayed. I find it very difficult to make a case for Northern Iowa. I know they've got the FBS win, but if you go 3-5 in your conference, I mean, that's tough to overcome.
You get a team like Lafayette who gets in based on the automatic bid. They go 5-6 overall. So if people are looking at that going, why are they getting in? They had the automatic bid. Looking down, you know, you could say, well, you know, Villanova was a good team. They went 5-3 in their conference, 6-5 overall. They didn't get in. One of the things that hurts is a couple things in my mind. You have the Patriot League, who does put in a team like Lafayette. Fordham does scholarships, and they don't qualify for the automatic bid because the Patriot League is a non-scholarship league. So now that Fordham does have scholarships, it allows them to compete with FBS teams, and it disqualifies them from winning their conference. So you look at this, the Patriot League puts in two teams this year instead of one, which is kind of on par with what they do. There's a spot for Youngstown State to sneak in.
That's fair, and that's good information. I did not know that. And in my mind, if that's going to be the case, then they shouldn't be allowed to be in the conference.
The Ohio Valley had three teams get in. Jacksonville State, Tennessee State. Jacksonville State went 9-3 overall, 5-3 in the conference. You know, Jacksonville State, who did they beat? Realistically, I'm looking at their schedule. They beat Georgia State. Now, that's an FBS school, supposedly. I mean, they have the label as FBS school. And we could go on forever. We could. But again, there's so many things out here that you're going, how did some of these teams get in? And then the Valley, which has teams that dominates other conferences. Specifically, I think of the Southland, who puts in three teams. And you have two Missouri Valley teams beat two of the Southland teams that get in Northern Iowa and South Dakota State. It's very interesting what the committee saw in some of these teams. And, you know, it didn't help. Northern Iowa's not going to say, well, it's the committee's fault. They're going to blame themselves for that bad stretch they had. They started the conference season 0-5. You know, you can't do that. You have to pick yourself up after you lose to NDSU. It's the same thing that happened to Youngstown last year. Youngstown comes into the Fargo Dome, gets beat, they fall apart. Same thing with Youngstown. If you asked them, is the committee's fault? It'd be no, it's our fault. Although Wolford, the head coach for him, I don't know if he'd so much admit to that. He'd probably say, you know, if Kurt Hess was healthy, maybe we'll see what happens.
Sure.
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. It's something that we'll get a chance to go through as time goes on. I know that we'll, again, have this bracket picker up later this week. Looking at some other things, I think we can move on. I got the ongoing wager right, so that's good for me. I'm happy about that. Let's move on to the NDSU men's basketball team.
Yes.
Now, where do you want to start with this? Do you want to talk about their week in general, where they went 1-2 starting on Monday, where I said I believe that they needed to win on Monday? And
I immediately regret this decision.
Yeah, that was kind of stupid by me. I'm going to go ahead and admit it. That was really just, you know, I was...
Wrong.
Played really well against them. Ended up losing anyways. They had Western Michigan on the road middle of the week. Played very well in that game. And then today against UND. So what do you want to do, Brad? You want to start with the UND game and work our way back? Or do you want to just discuss UND since that's fresh on our mind?
I mean, I think UND is probably the place to start. Game, you know, we're recording this late Sunday night. Just happened. You just got back from the game.
Right.
I watched it on TV. Well, what were you, again, you were at the game, so we got two different viewpoints on it. What was your main takeaway? What was your overall impression of the game?
My overall impression of the game was that UND has a team that has got a lot of players that can come in and fill time and do it well without your risk of hurting the overall performance of the team. They have a deep bench. They played 11 guys, but they had three guys off the bench who played some significant minutes. But, you know, essentially for me, what I saw was a really deep UND team put together very well with a lot of seniors. I think they have 7 on there. That was my main takeaway. UND's a lot better, you know, picked to finish second in the Big Sky, a lot better than people even understand. They're very good, very disciplined team.
And they've got a star.
Troy Hoff, man. You cannot argue. There was a play that he made, rebound, and I was sitting down low, and I watched him come from the weak side, and he was probably on the baseline come from the weak side, maybe even out at the three-point line when he started to come in, and that should have been NDSU's rebound. He comes in, doesn't so much out-jump as he out-physicals Kading or Bjorklund, I wasn't sure, for the rebound, rips it down, goes right back up, gets the foul. And I looked at that play and go, that's a tough play right there. For you to defend for a guy like Troy Hoff who can get you from every angle. He's physical down low, strong enough to finish, yet he's got a good enough touch from the outside to knock down threes. What was your take watching on TV?
Couple of things. The offense was a little bit disappointing because it looked for a while like there wasn't much of one, and then the second half it was basically give the ball to Taylor and get out of the way, which was fine, and it worked. And Braun had a great game, had great numbers, finishing line, 34 points I think he finished with. But that isn't really, that's not the offense that's going to get it done going through a conference schedule. And they just, there was no ball movement. It was, again, Taylor going to the rack. And you've been on, I'm sure you've probably been in games like that where you've had a guy on your team
right.
who shot the ball every single time down the floor. It's real tough to feel involved in. Maybe you were that guy. I don't know, but it's
definitely
tough.
Not.
But it's tough to feel involved in the game at that point when you're. I mean, you're not even getting to touch the ball. You kind of walk down on offense. You stand around and then you know get back on D. And I don't know if that's the case. I know that's maybe more of a high school thing than hopefully what is at the college. But I know you see it in the pros sometimes,
yeah.
where you know you don't get the ball. It's just easy to get to not feel a part of the game.
My brother and I were watching the game together, and he said that Joey made the comment to me. He goes, he's not really sharing the ball. He's not even looking for his teammates. And I said at the time, I said, yeah, but
I mean, that's
when
what,
when you're going the way he was.
Yeah.
Do you really pass the ball at that point in the game? The offense wasn't doing anything, and so sometimes stars, and this has been always kind of one of my points that I like Taylor Brown because of this, and he's going to do this, I think, from time to time. He knows when it's time to take over, and he understood that, look, right now, Marshall Bjorklund is not getting to the hole. We tried that earlier in the game where we go down low, and he'd make a couple moves, and he'd either not get fouled or miss a layup, or maybe he'd put one in on the third try, whatever that may be. But at that point, he's going, okay, something needs to happen here. And he kept going to the hole, he kept getting fouled, and he kept finishing too.
I wish there was more movement in the offense. I wish there was more, and I'm not going to pretend I know more about basketball than Saul Phillips, but it just feels like the offense gets stagnant fairly often. And I'd like to see just a little bit more movement.
I can't argue with there. I'll defend Braun at this game for continuously going to the hole.
That was the only thing that was working. I agree with you. That was working. They were getting points. That was the only thing that was keeping them relatively close to that game. So
yeah.
I'm with you there. I get it. But yeah, the fact that it got to that point.
The offense is stagnant. The biggest concerns that I come from this, and these are things that I don't know if they're correctable. You had a problem with one of the aspects of the game overall that is correctable, I think, for this team. And it's the pick-and-roll defense. And
yes.
I'll let you explain that in a minute. But I have some things that I don't know if they are correctable. And we don't know. Carlin Dupree is a guy that wasn't able to start the season right away. He's a freshman. He's supposedly going to have a pretty integral part on this team as far as minutes and how he fits in with the team. I don't know what he's going to bring to the team. I don't. They need him to bring something because this bench offensively is pitiful. Chris Kadien had 8 points, and then Felt went 0-4 from the field.
And took a couple of bad shots,
you're right. Dupree only played 3 minutes. He had a couple points. Jordan Aaberg he's just there to fill space. He's your foul acceptor, is what I like to say. He's the guy who's going to say, all right, Bjorklund has 2, Trayvon has 2, whoever has 2, Aaberg, pick up a couple fouls. Make sure we don't get anybody else in foul trouble. That's essentially what he is.
Yeah.
If he gets a block, if he gets a couple rebounds, all right, you know what? Cherry on top, but he takes up space. NDSU's bench, to me, is an issue.
Yeah. I can't argue.
The teams that they've lost to have deep benches. UND has a really deep bench from what I'm seeing here looking at the stats, and they played a lot of guys. You're going to have your core dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Troy Hoff, Aaron Anderson. Jerron Nash. By the way, Jerron Nash, who was wearing number 1 for any of those who watched the game, that guy is going to be a stud. Is a stud. Very good player. I was very impressed with him. Side note, anyways, you're going to have your core guys. Southern Miss had a very deep bench. They're a really good team. They play a hectic style of press. That's the one thing I noticed about them that's going to be unique for NDSU. They're not going to see that again this year. It's not really on tap with what Louisville does. But it's one of those run-and-jump presses that they kind of go with the moment. And if they feel this run-and-jump press is going to work for them, they'll go with it. But they want ball pressure. And they do it so teams have a tough time getting into the offensive sets. NDSU stayed with them. I think Southern Miss, probably a better team than UND, in all honesty. But UND looked like they could have beaten anybody in this game. So the bench, to me, is an issue. And the three-point shooting. Because you have to be able to spread the floor because NDSU, the core of this offense, they want to go down low. They want to get Marshall. They want to get Bjorklund on the post. They want to get him on the blocks. They want to slow down the offense. They want to have good possessions. You can't do that if everybody's packing in, saying, all right, go ahead and shoot. I get Trayvon Wright was in foul trouble. He had a disappearing act in this game. Pretty much wasn't present. But you have to be able to spread the floor. And they can't do that if they're going to shoot 1 for 12. This is like the third game I've seen them do three-point shots of one or two makes in a game.
And we're talking about the offense. And you know, if you ask Saul Phillips, my guess is in the post-game press conference, he probably said, we can't give up 95 points, obviously. And he's going to point to the defense because that's his specialty. And, you know, you mentioned earlier that I had a problem with the pick and roll. And they just, I thought the pick and roll was defended very poorly, and I know we're probably getting too farther into the X's and O's maybe than we should on a podcast like this. But
let's go with it. I love it.
I mean, there when the guy when the ball handler came around the pick, the person guarding it, and whether it was Trayvon Wright, Marshall actually did, I thought, did a pretty good job of at least stretching out the ball handler a little bit, but Trayvon and Kading and Jordan didn't really do a great job of hopping out on the pick and roll and making the ball handler do something other than just turn the corner and be able to get to the rack. There was way too much of that taking place, especially in the second half. And that's got to change because that messes up all your rotations, and that's where you saw some of those wide-open three balls from UND coming. And, you know, as you mentioned, are those correctable things? Yeah. Can you correct the bench? Not unless you start pulling some red shirts and you think you got guys ready to go.
And I don't think they do. I don't think A.J. Jacobson's ready to go. I really don't. I think he needs another year based on what I saw in high school and based on the fact that I don't know how much he's grown, but I can't imagine it's enough physically for him to be ready for the college game. These things will come around defensively. I truly believe that. I'm going to make it a point on Monday, if Coach Phillips is at the usual press conference, and he has been lately, to ask him about the rule changes in college basketball. Yeah. There's a major focus on hand checking.
And free throws.
And free throws.
And lots of free throws.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, in this game, UND went 33 of 41. NDSU was 26 of 36. Missed a lot of second half free throws, which, you know, I ran into one of our mutual friends, Michael Howe, at the end of the game, and he said, boy, if they could have hit free throws in that second half. There were some critical periods there where they were still hanging in 10, 9.
They'd get it even down to 6 at a couple points and just couldn't get it any closer.
They had free throws there that they could have made.
Yeah.
Felt left one out there. There was a 1-on-1 that Taylor Braun missed on there. So they're there. Yeah, okay. I'll give you that. But again, NDSU, bench-wise to me, just too many issues with the bench. But again, like I said, I'm going to make it a point to ask Saul, has the hand-checking fouls or the focus on calling hand-checking fouls screwed up what you guys want to do defensively?
That's fair.
And I want an answer because I want to write an article about it, or at least a blog, at least get something out there, because I feel that we're going to see this from teams defensively, and it might take a little bit of a transition period to figure out how to get to a point where we can get comfortable with ourselves defensively without trying to hand check or getting the hand check calls. They also called kind of the coming under foul. It's like a blocking foul when a guy's in the air and they move out.
Undercutting. Yeah.
Undercutting, yeah. They called a lot of those on NDSU in that game, which I was a little bit surprised at. I don't know. The refereeing, again, they're going to be largely focused, I feel, on just calling a lot of fouls. So maybe they did their job well. I don't know. Was it horrible? No. It wasn't as bad as the football game where Zach Vrah had the touchdown that completely got discalled. What was that?
You know,
going back to that football. That was one of the oddest things I had ever seen.
You know, And here's the thing. I never saw a replay that was his. There wasn't a camera angle that I saw where you could see the football the entire way. His back was shielding the football every single angle that I saw, all the angles that showed in the Fargo Dome. You know, I don't know if the guy was literally fighting him the entire time, how solidly he had the ball. That's the only thing I could think of trying to give the referees any benefit of the doubt, which the crowd in the Fargo Dome most certainly did not.
No.
But. Yeah, that was...
Why not? Here's my problem with it. Okay, you made the call. That's fine. Why not explain why you did it?
Yeah.
And just say, because the receiver never had possession of the ball, was bobbling it the whole way down, we have decided to call this an incomplete pass.
The defender and offensive player were both competing for the ball, and the act of the catch was not completed when the ball came loose, incomplete.
I respect that. I'll say, okay, bad call, but at least you explain to me why. The referee just says, that's an incomplete, and then moves on from it. Is it his job to explain it to me? Not necessarily. I suppose it isn't. But at least give some clarification.
Something. Yeah.
You know?
You don't have to go hockey-ly and give us a monologue.
No, you don't.
Just, yeah.
Some explanation, because you have to remember that there are people out there that are curious and not everybody knows.
And it's nice to have something to complain about in a 42-0 blowout.
Exactly. So, looking at what else we could talk about, you know... The women's basketball team, Brooke Lamar, is awesome. I've kind of come to notice this, but the team itself is going to have growing pains. Is that going to work out in Carolyn Diehoff's favor, the head coach of the team?
Growing pains are a tough thing to have in the last year of a contract.
Exactly. And that's what I thought of. They're up, I want to say, about 12 or something on UNI this week at home, and ended up losing 86 to 82 with under 3 minutes to go. They had a comfortable lead. Should have won that game. Again, they're a really young team.
You nailed it. That's exactly what you talked about. Some of those close games, it'll just take a while to figure out how to win them. And
yep.
You said that last week, I think, and you were right.
But Brooke Lamar is the real deal. I will say that because I'm looking at her stat lines, and everywhere they go, it's NDSU's going to have some bad play. She's been right up here. She's been way near the top for that team. So that's good. And the fact that at least you have somebody you can go and say, hey, man, she's really playing her butt off here. She's somebody I can kind of get on board with and watch when I go to these games. Competing, yeah, that's all well and good. But how long can you put out that company line and say, hey, we've competed in games and we've been close before it gets a little old? It might get old this season. We'll see. But we'll leave it at that. Let's move on to
regional.
NFC North play. It got really interesting today. Vikings and Packers tied at 26, which again the NFL needs.
Whoa, question mark.
I feel that the NFL needs to figure out a way to have a deciding win, like who's going to win a game instead of having this tie at the end.
A field goal kickout?
No.
Of a shootout, a kickout?
No.
No.
Keep playing maybe. Or maybe after the first overtime, if it is tied, then okay, have it be you have to score a touchdown within, make it like college. Both teams get a possession, but instead of kicking field goals are no longer allowed. You have to score a touchdown.
Part of it is with some of these teams that the game could literally go on forever.
Could.
And part of it, if you would ask the NFL, part of the argument is the health of our players.
No. Don't give me that garbage. If the NFL comes after me with it could be the health of our players, yet they have Thursday games.
I understand it. I'm just giving you the company line. I'm just giving you the company line.
Okay.
Okay. You can't go on that long because the football gets. You saw the end of the Vikings Packers game. Maybe you didn't. You were on the way to Grand Forks.
I was, but I heard about it. It just sounded.
It was bad football. Yeah. I didn't want to watch any of it, any more of that. At that point, I was like, you know what? Tie's good.
Which is unfortunate because it ended up being a really good game.
And here's the thing. It happens, what, once every other year, if that is probably like, about what the average is.
Yep.
I'm not going to get all up in arms. Oh, my gosh, we need to abolish ties. Take it easy. When it only happens every so often, because I think there are people out there, and you said, and you know, saying, hey, we should do something, get rid of it, is, you know, standing on a soapbox instead of standing on a soapbox screaming. Okay, would I prefer that a game not end in a tie? Sure, but it doesn't happen often enough for it to be an issue for me.
Oh my, he's on fire!
You slammed your fist down pretty hard there. There's some reverberation within the mics. No, that's why you're on fire. So that ends in a tie. The Packers, to me, more of a winner in the tie than they are a loser because...
Actually, they're equal parts both.
If you really want to break it down, the Vikings should have won that game. They're up 23-10. They're running all over Green Bay. The Packers bring in Matt Flynn.
Yeah.
Who... brings them all the way back, 16 points in the fourth quarter to tie it up and go to overtime, and they end up in a tie. The reason that they come out a little bit ahead in this tie is because the Bears got throttled by the Rams, 42-21, and the Lions lose to the Bucks. Stafford's picked off four times. We'll get into Jim Schwartz. And... his job security with this Detroit team, because you lose a game last week that they had all the opportunity to win. You lose to the Bucs. It doesn't sound like you're running the ball that much when I'm looking at, well, Bush had 15 carries for 83 yards, but you're throwing it 46 times with Stafford. Again, and that last pick, if you saw the replay of that last pick, it was kind of a fluky pick. But turnovers, 5 turnovers for Detroit. Who wants to win this division? That's kind of become the mantra for the NFL. Who wants to win their division, really?
Anybody?
Yeah.
Anybody
out there? Dallas put their hat back into the ring because they beat the Giants. And I'm looking at the score, and this is a complete sideboard. It doesn't matter. I'm looking at the score while I'm at the game, sitting next to my brother. Dallas is up 21-6. And I looked at my brother and go, this game, they're going to find a way to lose this. Just hang on. Next one comes in, 21-13. I go, okay, just hang on. Next update comes in. Oh, the Giants just scored a touchdown and got the 2-point conversion. I'm like, told you, tied 21. Dallas got got a field goal late to win, and so they're back on a tie for the top with Philadelphia at 6-5. So we'll get into all of that NFL stuff in a little bit. However, I do want to touch on the Wisconsin-Minnesota game. Did you watch any of it? No?
Nope.
Surprised by the score, 20-7 Wisconsin.
Not particularly.
Did you think Minnesota had a chance going in?
Not particularly. No.
Do you feel that Minnesota Gopher fans overblow the success of their team a little bit?
Very particularly. Yes. Yes, very much so.
I thought this was going to be a bigger win for Wisconsin, and when you really look at it, they shut out the Minnesota offense. I don't think the Minnesota offense got past the Gopher or the Badger 30-yard line until the fourth quarter. The Gophers... hang on. Gopher fans, you were never that good. It's the Big Ten. There are a lot of bad teams out there in the Big Ten. If you would have played Ohio State, Michigan State, and say now Wisconsin in three straight weeks, it would have been loss, go home crying to your mom, stay at home, keep crying because you just got throttled in succession. Just because you beat a Northwestern team that we all overrated at the beginning of the season, a bad Nebraska team that's going to fire their head coach and completely clean shop at the end of the season, and an Iowa team, what you lost to, actually, now that I think about it, you lost to an Iowa team. You haven't beat anybody. You haven't beat anybody.
Whoa. You're on fire.
I am. So I was happy to see them go down. I was. And I thought it was going to be worse. Makes me happy when the Gophers lose. And in a small way, it might help recruiting for you and I and NDSU. In a small way. Although I think the Gophers, I will say this, they're getting around to becoming a better football team. But let's pull back the reins a little bit, Gopher fans, because when you
play, I feel
play
like
and
you're directing this to somebody specific.
I'm not, just in
no?
general.
Okay, okay.
It's just to Gopher fans that listen to this, which I don't even, I've never actually met a real Gopher fan.
Wow.
I don't know
wow.
if they, I don't know if they exist actually.
Woo.
So, oh yeah, I'm going after them. So we'll move on from that. Not a lot regionally. Yeah, we can skip Twins talk. I heard they're going after Jared Saltalamacchia.
Hey, look at you.
They call him Salty.
That was a correct pronunciation. My
yeah, they're going after him, I think, based on the fact that they want to... I don't think they want to rush Josemel Pinto into the starting catching position.
You just wanted a reason to bring up Pinto.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, so I know. Yeah, that's something that we could talk about. The next time we talk Twins baseball on this podcast will hopefully be when they sign somebody relevant that we can actually talk about.
Or we might be fired by then because it'll be like March or April. You just never know.
Yeah, you never know. We, me.
That's true. Yeah, they can't fire me because they're not paying
yeah,
me.
They
so.
Yeah, they can't fire you. They can fire me. So we'll move on to...
National.
NFL, like I said, who wants to win these leagues? You look around the NFL, you look at the standings. Good one going on right now in New England.
Yeah, it was 24-0 early with Denver, and New England has stormed back.
28-24.
Which doesn't matter to anybody out there because the game will be completed by the time you listen to this.
Right, exactly.
It entertains us anyway.
Interesting anyways. Dallas won, which is a big win. Again, they've played within their division. They're 4-0 in their division. That's big. The Giants fall to 4-7. So Dallas continues to make a bid for the playoffs. Detroit, Chicago stay tied. Carolina keeps pace with New Orleans with a win over Miami. Seattle had a bye. New England's still up there in the East. We're starting to see some separation is kind of what I'm getting into. Kansas City had a really tough loss against San Diego. Kansas City may not be as good. They're going to win a wild card because I don't think anybody's going to get to 9 wins in a second-place team right now. They may win the wild card by winning one more game. However, we like to kind of void all that kind of playoff talk for now since we're not even done with week 12.
We got 5 games left. So.
Let's go to our favorite topic.
Yeah.
The top 3 hot seat NFL coaches.
Otherwise known as the mean-spirited corner of the week.
Yes, which I love. All right. I'll kick it off with my number 3. I've got Gary Kubiak of the Houston Texans.
Yep. Kubiak's going to – he will be spotted on my list as well, but my number 3 is Leslie Frazier. Ties aren't going to get the job done there, sir. If you want to try to save your job, just ain't going to cut it. I think Frazier is going to be done at the end of the year, but he's number 3. Buns are getting a little toasty here.
Yeah, he's at 4 for me.
Okay. We don't have 4. We just have 3.
Well, we have 3, right. So he's kind of in the reserve. My number 2 is Joe Philbin of the Miami Dolphins. Would have gone a long way to keep his job had they won against Carolina today.
Yeah, Carolina's rolling 7 straight now.
Unbelievable. The other thing, too, is that if Philbin somehow can put this team back together and win, get into the playoffs somehow through a wild card, which is a possibility, because everybody else in second place right now in the AFC is at like 5 wins outside of Kansas City.
Yeah.
So there's a shot for him to maybe get a team in. If he does that, I think he saves his job, maybe. But he's my number two right now, Richie Incognito and the bullying scandal. It's just, ugh, it's ugly.
Yeah.
You're number two.
Kubiak. Kubiak's going to be my number two. I think I think he's done, son. I think it's over.
Yeah, that one, to me, if the Philbin thing doesn't hold true, if he makes playoffs, Kubiak's just right there squarely at two. He's almost as cemented as a guy that has been holding the number one spot since we started this thing.
Pretty close. He wasn't number one for me to start the year, but he found his way there pretty quickly.
Yes, Greg Schiano.
Yeah.
But even so, the Bucks won today.
Three straight
for the Bucks. Still not going to hang on to his job.
No, I don't think so.
No. Just the whole fact that there are a lot of people coming out of the Tampa Bay camp saying he's not a good coach. A little too this, a little too that.
But it's funny because now the story's going to be, well, you know, he really motivates his players. And you know what? They just haven't quit on him. And it's just so funny how the narrative changes just depending on the result. And
right.
When it really should be dependent on the process.
Exactly. And Schiano, to me, is going to be number one until something nuts happens. Until players come out and say, we don't want Schiano to go, which I don't think will happen. The guys that are kind of floating in the back a little bit, Leslie Frazier of the Vikings, absolutely. Mike Smith of the Atlanta Falcons. And you don't like that one because of why?
Is it a really, really bad year? Yeah, but it's just his first bad year after a string of really good years. I think if you've had a string of 3 or 4 pretty good years like Atlanta's had, you get one. You don't get two, but you get one and you'll get a chance to come back.
Okay. I like that. I like that take. To me, though, it almost is the same thing with what Houston had. These expectations for your team were so high,
yeah, but
and they haven't delivered.
But here's the thing is Houston's under-delivered every single year.
Except last year.
I mean, and even then, a little bit. I mean, you really kind of thought that they would be better last year, but they were supposed to make a run for about 3 years and get to a Super Bowl. Or you know, they had the talent to do that and didn't get it done. Atlanta made the NFC Championship game last year, played a heck of a game, but I don't think the expectations were as high for Atlanta as they have been for Houston.
I feel bad for a guy like Tony Gonzalez.
Yes.
Because
yes,
he comes back after retiring, and he should have stayed retired, but he comes back because he believed Atlanta's got this great opportunity to make the Super Bowl, which a lot of people had him penciled in as, yeah, they're going to be Super Bowl type team.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he should have retired. I mean, again, hindsight coming
into
the year.
Yeah, hindsight's 2020.
Yeah, I mean, coming into the year, you thought you had a shot, and if you want to play football for one more year,
play football.
Yeah, absolutely.
So those are our three. Tom Coughlin's still floating in the background there, although he did enough to get off the hot list because they won 4 in a row. He's been a 2-time Super Bowl winning coach.
There was a really interesting article by Bill Barnwell on Grantland that I texted you about last week, and he kind of went through the coaches that he thought would leave. He had Coughlin on the list, but as Coughlin just saying, I'm done. I'm retiring and walking away rather than getting fired. Thinks if he wanted to come back next year, he'd be able to.
So we'll see how that works out. We're opening up a new category, my top three duos, which actually Marcus from Mayville has comments on.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
So do you want to unveil the new kind of thing we're doing with our NBA, or do you want to get to Marcus and Mayville?
Real quick, we'll talk about – I just want to mention, we talked about it a little bit before the show as far as doing something different. And the thing with the duos that was tough is that there wasn't really any end to it.
Yeah, it's all...
At least with the coaches on our hot seat, at the end of the year, we're going to be able to see, okay, of the three people that we have on our hot seat at the end of the year, they're either going to be gone or we're either going to be right or wrong. They're either going to be gone or they're going to be coming back. With the top duos, there wasn't really any end to it.
Yeah.
It was just going to be...
It's an arbitrary
thing. Yeah, it's going to be really arbitrary all the way through. So we're going to be doing something with awards. And we're going to be picking our top three for different awards throughout the year. We're going to start with the MVP, and we'll probably come back to that one more often.
Yep.
But we may give our defensive player of the year throughout points of the season, sixth man. This way, at least when it comes down to award season, we can take a look at our list and maybe get a board wager or two out of an ongoing wager out of this as well,
right,
with some of the arguments.
So that's what we're going to do. We'll get to that in a second. However, Marcus and Mayville had a comment.
Okay.
He goes, so far right now, and we talked about top duos, he said, what about Paul George, Roy Hibbert, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Harden, or Howard? Not necessarily as the top three, but to be in the conversation. They weren't even mentioned in an all-stars on playoff-caliber teams. And he does have, though, he kind of double-dipped, if you will, because same comment down there.
If you want to have some fun with James Harden's defense, I believe it's Deadspin.
Yes.
Has a couple of great GIFs out there of James Harden not paying attention at all on defense, kind of looking like
James,
you.
Yes.
Looking, with the beard, he kind of looks like a homeless guy wandered onto the court wearing a Rockets jersey and just kind of hanging out.
Yes.
Good stuff. If you get a chance to check that out, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of entertaining.
It is fun. I think essentially what they've called the thread is James Harden does not care about defense.
And then
next one is James Harden still not caring about defense.
Yep.
Something like that. It's actually pretty hilarious. That and Andre Bargnani of the Knicks. If you find some threads on him, and for you specifically, Brad, but there are some really funny ones.
Okay.
Andre, they just rip Andre Bargnani apart for his lack of defense. But be that as it may, those are really good top duos right now.
Sure.
But as we said, we're going to move on from that and get into the top three MVPs in the NBA.
And Brad, usually I'm a big proponent of don't give me this right now business. Who is it going to be throughout the year? This one I'm willing to go along with you on your right now business.
Okay. Because I'm trying to – the way I look at it is the way I see teams performing right now, who's performing above where they were supposed to be. Like, for instance, Toronto's 6-7 and probably the worst – not probably, the worst division in all of the NBA.
Who would have thought that at this point of the season, the Knicks and Brooklyn would be a combined 6-19?
And the Boston Celtics are in third place in that division. The Philadelphia 76ers are 6-9.
Just gross.
And the Toronto Raptors
– Raptors.
My Toronto Raptors, baby. If the playoffs started today, would be a number three. They would be a number three seed.
Stop it. They'd be a four seed, actually, but stop it.
A four seed, whatever. No, isn't every division winner a
– No, they guarantee you a top four, but if there's a wild card that's higher than a division winner, they'll give them that.
Well, yeah, they would be – Atlanta would be three. They'd be the four. That's awesome. Love the NBA. Okay, right now, let's get serious about this.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if we're ever serious on the podcast. I'll let you start because I'm still trying to mull over who is 1, 2, and 3. Because I'm going to stick with what I said right away just because I like the way their teams are playing at this point in the season. But I'll let you start with your number three.
My number three guy is somebody who is probably not going to be on your list, but I think just deserves to be on it for just sustained period, and it's LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he might not win it this year just out of sheer boredom of the voters
voting
for him.
It's the reason Jordan lost a couple MVPs.
Yep. So right now, though, I think LeBron's number three. He's got Miami at 10-3. They've come out and still playing good basketball, winning games. So I got LeBron at my number three spot.
My number three, and I do MVPs based off where teams are at.
Yep, and that plays a part. It really does.
I'm looking at Portland right now, 12-2, and I think of LaMarcus Aldridge. Guy scores a lot of points, gets a lot of rebounds. They're going to get largely ignored because they play in the northwest part of the nation. They play in the Northwest Division, which is probably the toughest division in basketball when you have Portland, Oklahoma City, Minnesota, and Denver all in that division.
I'd argue the Southwest. I mean, their
San Antonio,
last place team,
Dallas, Houston.
Their last place team in the Southwest is .500 right now.
Memphis is really tough. I guess if you put those four, because I don't think New Orleans is going to stay 6-6
Anthony
the rest
Davis
of the year.
Anthony Davis is the real deal. I don't know if you've watched him yet
I've
this year.
I've seen some of his games. Pretty
he
good guy.
He's the real deal.
Yeah.
Their backcourt's a mess, but he's the – I mean
– They'll be there in a couple years, I think, with Davis. But you're right. The Southwest does have – four very good teams, and Denver's probably going to get throttled by Memphis if you matched up that way. And Houston, I would flip a coin with Minnesota, but based on the interior offense and defense of Houston, Minnesota probably lose that game. So you're right, the Southwest a little bit better, although Northwest is a very good.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, no,
LaMarcus Aldridge to me number three in the MVP conversation. Number two, Brett.
I think we might have the same guy at number two. Maybe. I think this guy's going to be on your list.
Okay.
I got Tony Parker.
Okay. I did too, and then I just changed it because I started to think about it a little bit.
Okay. They're 12-1.
Yeah, think of that.
They just don't stop. And right now, Tony Parker is it's him and Chris Paul 1 and 1A as far as who the best point guard in the NBA is.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're 12-1.
Right.
It's boring. You may not want to see them, but they're always there. So Tony Parker, number two for me.
For me, number two, and I thought about it, and I got to go Chris Paul.
CP3, okay.
Because he's finally going to get some recognition playing in a major market. He's got this team going very well. They're a very good team with the fact that Jamal Crawford has given them that sixth man off the bench, some scoring opportunities. I think what Blake Griffin and Paul have going on is really well.
My boy J.J. Redick lighting it up.
J.J. Redick and with Doc Rivers there, which I have to give credit to Marcus and Mayville. He talked about the fact that Doc Rivers is going to make the Clippers better. I think he was on to something in that.
Yeah.
I think he simplified the offense in a way and said, let's make J.J. Redick our Ray Allen.
I used to get up when I would be sleeping in until 1 o'clock back in some of my college days.
Yeah, attaboy.
I would get up to watch, specifically to watch J.J. Redick if they had an earlier game. Loved J.J. Redick. Appointment TV at Duke, and I've been waiting for him to get to a spot where he's going to be a little bit more relevant, and glad to see that now in L.A.
I think that J.J. Redick and this team, the fact that he's able to run around screens and finally have a team that has a point guard good enough to get him the ball, and there's no Dwight Howard on the team.
Yeah.
J.J. Redick fits into his role perfectly with the Clippers, but Chris Paul makes that offense go.
So you have Paul, too.
I have Paul, too. You're number one.
Paul George.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we agree.
Yeah, he's just been phenomenal for this Indiana team.
He has.
Indiana is going to be a bugger for Miami. I hope that playoff series happens again.
I do too.
The fingers crossed that everybody stays healthy, because we've already seen Derrick Rose go down again. He's out indefinitely. Fingers crossed
sad
that
Derrick
Indiana
Rose.
Indiana stays healthy, and that we get a healthy Indiana, healthy Miami in the playoffs, because I think that's going to be some phenomenal basketball, and it's going to be chippy with the way those teams play. But I can't wait for that.
Frank Vogel, head coach of the Pacers, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Don't take Roy Hibbert out. That would be my one piece of advice for him when it comes to late-game situations. Do not take Hibbert out. He's 7'100", whatever. He's huge. He protects the rim. LeBron James, even LeBron James himself, would have a tough time getting to the basket with him on defense. Just saying. Paul George is my number one as well. This team is really well put together. They're physical. Interior wise, we talk about how NDSU is so good offensively because they dominate the interior line defensively and offensively. That's what makes Indiana good. They're really good down low, but they have this guy in Paul George that makes them that much better, because he's separating himself from the pack. He was just a player for a while, and then in the playoffs last year, stepped it up.
Yep.
And now he is the star of this team. Right at this point, does deserve the MVP in my mind, with the Pacers at 12-1. We'll see how this season goes, but when I look defensively, when you think about points allowed, and they're averaging 87.6.
That's
insane,
sick.
In the NBA. Because teams are throwing up 100 like it's no problem. 87.6. Remember that number. It might get elevated a little bit, but they're going to find a way to win games, and they're just going to find games to win dirty. They'll win games 77-80. They'll win them like that, or they'll just go out and blow you out 104-77. So, yes, Paul George, to me, MVP of the NBA at this point. I can't wait to get into this more now. We talked it because I'm thinking defensive player of the year. I've already got a guy in mind.
Yeah.
Sixth man. It's going to be fun.
Coach of the year.
Yeah. It'll be good. We could put on who will end up having the worst record.
Yeah.
Too. Because
will Anthony Bennett be a worse number one overall pick than Kwame Brown?
There's endless ways
that we can go with
Anthony
this.
Bennett, I am so sorry. Because he looks like a fun guy. He doesn't have the Kwame Brown just smug look to him, and he didn't come out of high school. He did it right. Played 3 years in college. Maybe four. I can't remember. I know he's in college for a little bit. I feel bad for the guy. Of course, he does have more money than me, so maybe I don't feel that bad for the guy. So that's going to wrap it up for the 020 podcast. Remember, check us out on iTunes. We're on iTunes.
We are on iTunes.
The Pinto and White Shadow Show. Find us in the iTunes store. Of course, we are on KFGO.com. Marcus from Mayville. Tyler from Tennessee. We take all your comments. We love them. Make sure and check those out. Email us, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com, or hit us up on Twitter. You can find me at PintoKFGO. You can find my co-host, Brad the White Shadow Jones, at
The Bison Guy.
So, for Brad Jones and Daniel Gunderson, thank you so much for listening to the 020 podcast of the Pinto White Shadow Show, and have a wonderful rest of your day. How you like me now?